Hey, 8:30 a.m. KSEP. Rob Rosenfeld is on the line with me this morning. This is Meet the People. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing great. Enjoying the fact that spring is here.
Well, you are campaigning for the Democratic Party in Alaska's nomination for governor in 2010.
That is true, and I'm just beginning the campaign and mounting up for when we're actually able to receive contributions, which would begin May 2nd. And starting to put a team of volunteers together and looking forward to a year and a half of very hard work to get some issues out there and influence the dialogue and increase my name recognition. And in the end, end up in Juneau is the plan.
Well, what have you done so far in your campaign and how has it been received?
Well, initially I've been starting off with many of my work colleagues in throughout rural Alaska, and I've been talking also to many friends both around the country and in the state, and also spoke with the Democratic Party at length. I've spoke on a number of radio shows around the state. I've written a couple of press releases thus far, formed a Facebook group, and starting to design a website and put together a statewide funding strategy and outreach strategy.
Well, what kind of reception, though, you're getting from your friends and the Democratic Party in Alaska as you go and you campaign for governor? What are they saying to you?
I'm getting a really, really positive response. The kind of response that I get at first, where folks are usually surprised when I mention that I'm running, and then after a couple of seconds, I can see the wheels turning, and the response I get is, good, thank you. We need somebody who's not a career politician, someone who's worked on the ground, who's brought about change, and who is just dedicated to improve the life of Alaskans. I moved here in 1989 initially, and I've been working in rural Alaska for the past 12 years extensively, and prior to that worked 4 years in the mental health field and at least a year with people in homeless situations.
What do you, if you're elected governor, what do you want to do for Alaska?
Well, my main theme is bringing Alaska together. And so often, so many sectors of society don't work in harmony together. And I really intend to bring state government together with federal government together with tribal and rural communities, environmental and nonprofit organizations, working more in harmony with state, federal, municipal, and local city-based initiatives. If we can get Alaska working better together, specifically with all the sectors, we'll be able to achieve many of the goals that are necessary for Alaska. I do have a campaign platform where I'll be focusing on education, economics, rural issues, the environment, and energy issues, with a with a special focus on our sewer and water problems in Alaska. If the percentage of the population in any other state in the country was without sewer and water like we have in Alaska, it would be the top issue, and it needs to be the top issue during this campaign and in all campaigns into the future until all Alaskans who want sewer and water are able to have that that important life necessity at a reasonable cost.
Electricity is something that also is expensive in Bush, Alaska communities and across the state in general. Now, you serve on the Renewable Energy Alaska Project Board of Directors. What have you accomplished in that capacity, and what does that group of individuals do?
Well, the Renewable Energy Alaska Project brings together utility companies with nonprofit organizations and representatives of rural communities in order to advocate for renewable energy funding and also to raise the consciousness of the renewable energy possibilities around Alaska. Chris Rose, the director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, does a great job, and the Renewable Energy Alaska Project played a significant role in bringing about the funding allocation that was put out by the Senate, put out in Juneau for $100 million. And the Renewable Energy Alaska Project did a lot of education and advocacy work to make that fund become a reality. And the first $50 million has already been allocated. With regards to energy, I currently work with the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council and was the director when we created a new energy department. We put in a 5-kilowatt hydroelectric unit in the village of Ruby, Alaska, and produced electricity last summer. And in 2 years, we'll be putting in a 25-kilowatt unit. You know, there's no silver bullet when it comes to energy. It's just like going to a financial advisor. If you have a little bit of money to invest somewhere, they'll always tell you to diversify. It's the same thing with energy. We have to diversify. We need to make the natural gas pipeline become a reality. We need to be able to pull off propane at key locations and have spurs in Fairbanks and other locations and consider ways to barge the propane to many of the rural communities. And it's time to develop tidal and wind and wave and solar. There's so much coastline throughout Alaska. There's no reason why we can't roll up our sleeves and make wave and tidal energy a reality.
Mm. I want to focus on the Renewable Energy Project funding that the Alaska State Legislature put in place last year and the year before, I believe, and they've again appropriated some money to that fund this year. The Alaska Energy Authority was in charge of reviewing grant applications. They got more than 200 applications, and a lot of the money went to utilities. Some of the money went to private utilities. How do you explain that? They're charging customers an awful lot of money for power and getting grants to charge the money. That doesn't make a lot of sense to someone like me who is faced with paying these bills as an individual and who heads up a radio station that has enormous expense when it comes to powering up the transmitter site. How do you explain the way in which that money has been allocated?
Well, you know, I certainly was not involved in the decision-making process as far as the Alaska Energy Authority. They had some difficult decisions. I know there is a good portion of the funds that do go to rural communities and also to the non-utility sector, which there are many entities throughout the state that have the capability to develop renewables. We do have some challenges with the utility companies and their willingness to make their own investments to make renewable energy a possibility. The argument we often hear from the utility companies is that if they put money into research and development, then they're going to have to charge the ratepayer. Now, I don't quite buy it. And, you know, I would like to see the utility companies start to figure out ways that they can invest in research and development without passing all the costs on to the ratepayer.
Mm. So would I. And I would also like to see the rules not be changed during the application review process. For example, the Alaska Energy Authority this year decided, after receiving the grant applications and reviewing them, that they were going to have this special little caveat rule, and that was that they would not fund two projects of the same purpose in a particular community. So if two groups, one being a power company and one being an independent power producer, were both applying for a grant for a wind turbine, they will only fund one. Now, this was not made public to applicants before they applied. It was just interesting to me and others that some of these rules seem to have been developed for the sole purpose of defending and protecting the interests of the utility companies. So I hope you would look into those kinds of things and make sure that this is really money that is going to forward the public good. But it sounds like you've done that. How is the project in Ruby, Alaska working out?
You know, it's working out very well. The electricity that was produced was tied into the grid, and the utility company was a local utility company owned by the community of Ruby, so there were no obstacles, which is what we face potentially with many utility companies around the state, that they actually throw up obstacles to be able to have local businesses and the homeowner have the ability to develop their own renewables. The issues that you're touching on, I know that it's very, very frustrating. And, you know, I got on I didn't really work with the utility companies very much until I got on the board of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. And I've taken the time to get to know them and try to hear their perspective. But in the end, many of the utility companies, not all, but many of the utility companies are actually the obstacles that stand in the way of developing renewables in the state. And we do have Golden Valley Electric, who started the SNAP program, which provides some incentives to the homeowner. Homer Electric has put some effort into emulating that program, but still it's not enough. The issue always boils down to interconnection standards and net metering.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the utility companies will tell the homeowner that they can't put renewables in their home and wire it because the interconnection standards are not adequate and the linemen can get hurt. And there needs to be statewide interconnection standards so the utility companies can't use that excuse any longer. Homeowners, any one of us should be able to integrate renewables into our homes. I believe state government should provide incentives in order to be able to provide matching funds for homeowners that make those investments. And we also need net metering so that the utility companies are required to buy back the energy that we produce beyond what our need requires, similar to what California is doing. We have a long way to go. The state did a good thing by setting the fund in place. We need to see a greater distribution of funds to go to non-utility entities such as rural communities, cities, tribes, nonprofits, and I'm in complete agreement with you that we need to have a fair distribution of those resources go elsewhere.
Well, that's good to hear. If you're just joining us on Meet the People on 8:30 a.m., heard in Sandpoint and in King Cove, I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest this morning is Rob Rosenfeld. He is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor in the 2010 race. Now, you mentioned a few of your platform issues, and I think there were education, economic, rural, and there were a couple of others. Let's touch on the economy in Alaska. How do you think we could find more jobs being produced in Alaska? Right now, unemployment is hovering at almost 9%, and it looks like it may not all be just seasonal unemployment. How do we address the issue in Alaska of a high unemployment rate?
Well, I'm glad that you're asking that question. We need to make that question front and center, not only for this campaign, but for local communities to address independently, and also for several communities that live in close proximity to one another to engage in multi-community economic development endeavors. But on the broader scale, so often in Alaskans' history, we've focused on resource extraction versus non-resource extraction activities. And there hasn't been any gray area. And what we need to do is we need to recognize that there's so many opportunities that are just staring us right in the face. A good example, the Kenai Peninsula. We had, and beyond, we've had beetle kill of epic proportions. The majority of large spruce trees on the Kenai Peninsula died. Instead of doing anything about it and turning that into an economic opportunity and an energy opportunity, the state and local residents, for the large part, let those trees just rot away to the point that they've lost their value. If we were agile as a state, we would have put funds into creating jobs on the Kenai Peninsula to harvest all those trees that had died from the beetle infestation. It would have created we could have created a pellet industry and lowered our energy costs while creating jobs. Take for instance on another idea, let's look at the bycatch, the billions of pounds of fish that have been wasted over the years. You know, let's think back to when the halibut openers were in full play back in the 80s. There were always tenders floating around out there that would offload some of the fish so that some of the boats could keep fishing. If the state and the federal government can't figure out how to stop bycatch, well, minimally, we need to have tenders out there to make sure none of those fish get wasted. We could have fish separated right on the board of on the boats of tenders. We could take those fish and process it into dog food, cat food, high quality products. If the fish were separated out, halibut in one area and salmon in another area, and the salmon that would normally be wasted need to find their way back to their rightful place up the rivers, where many of the communities are up the rivers and on along the coastline, where many of the communities are not getting the salmon that they've required for so many years.
I also think those are excellent points and things that would help us in the Aleutian Islands. Another point of interest and possible economic enrichment for the Aleutian Islands might be if you could have some of the products that are gotten from fishing actually enhanced and developed further before they leave the Aleutians, so that you'd actually have a finished product going out of Alaska. That costs money, of course, to develop that sort of an industry. How might the state assist rural Alaskan communities in developing that kind of an industry?
You know, to me, I think the answer is easy. Number one, it needs to be a priority of the state to be able to focus on creating real jobs, not talking about it, but actually really doing it. There are times where, over the past years, where the state, the budget has been in great shape, and we found out right before legislative sessions, and lobbyists and influential entities have muscled their way to the legislators' desks and gotten funds for pet projects. If we had ideas already developed, when there is surplus, when the fuel prices do go up again and the state coffers are filled up once again with the proceeds from the oil industry, we need to have some ready-made initiatives, such as adding value to all the products that normally do leave Alaska. We should have a grant program just focused on adding value to products before they're exported. Take, for instance, the timber industry. How often have we shipped pellets, chips, sawdust, and lumber away to China, Japan, or other Asian countries, and months later have the same tree come back to us in the form of a cheaply made piece of furniture that we buy at Fred Meyer? We have the capability of Alaskans to develop high quality furniture, to turn the wood products into products that would be marketable outside of Alaska and would create jobs. We can do that with the fishing industry as well. And so the state government should be providing incentives for small business startup, especially with the focus on value added to those products.
Yeah, value added was the word, the key word that I was looking for there. So that's good to hear you're thinking in terms of a grant program to help new business startups get going in Bush Alaskan communities. Let me ask you some questions about education. I see you have an undergraduate degree in adaptive physical education for grades K through 12. How do you think the education system might be improved in Alaska?
Well, the education system needs to make some significant changes in order to be successful here in Alaska. You did mention I do have a teaching degree. It's kindergarten through 12th grade, focused on adaptive physical education for people with disabilities. My master's degree is in international development and sustainable development. I went to a high school where 95% of the students went on to higher education, whether it be a vocational school or university. And I bring that up because we're failing in Alaska. Such a small percentage of high school graduates are going on to continued education. And we as Alaskans, whether it be parents, uncles, aunts, teachers, community leaders, state and federal government leaders, we need to start talking in the same language, and we need to be in harmony with each other, sending a message to the youth that in order to have a positive future, it's important to excel in education. It's important to look at the type of vocations they want to go into, and whether it's university or a vocational school, they need to move on after high school and continue to obtain skills that are necessary to help them become successful. The school systems need to do quite a bit more. One of the major things that I would invest money in as governor would be to focus on guidance counselors in the schools. I remember when I was in 10th grade, we had a guidance counselor that gave us aptitude tests, helped us identify our strengths. They'd offer us special coursework for our remaining 3 years. We'd design our course of study, and they'd help us target the kind of vocations that we ended up going into. Having that extra one-on-one attention with youth to stay with them as early as 9th grade on up, I think is critical. One of our other big issues in Alaska is high teacher turnover. When we have hundreds of rural Alaskan schools where teachers usually stay for 1 year, 2 years max, the continuity isn't there. We need teachers in rural Alaska who understand rural Alaska, who understand the traditions, the culture, the people, and the communication styles. If we put an aggressive effort in place to provide incentives for teachers to stay in for a significant period of time, I think we'd see a real positive result. And then lastly, we certainly need to invest in local teachers that are from rural Alaska, because the chances are greater that they will actually stay in the communities that they come from. I think it would be a great investment.
Now, you've been quite critical of Governor Sarah Palin and her administration. What are some of the things that you think that she has done most wrong?
It's a long list, but, you know, I've been real disappointed on many, many levels. I remember when Governor Palin selected Rhonda McBride as the Rural Issues Advisor. Many tribes, many municipalities, many individuals from rural Alaska spent money to go into Anchorage to meet with Rhonda to explain to them their many challenges and the potential solutions to face third world living conditions in rural Alaska. Rhonda listened with a close ear and intended to bring those challenges and solutions to Governor Palin and was unable to get one meeting with the governor for 10 months. Consequently, Rhonda McBride resigned from her position. So one of the things that I've also noticed with the Palin administration is that we have these advisors that have been put in place, task forces that have been put in place, and committees that have been put in place, and the governor is disconnected from all these advisory entities that are there. So she kind of operates independent from the system that's been created, even in some cases by her own administration. I met with the chairman of the Energy Committee, Representative Edgecombe, and he's been on the Energy Committee for more than 3 years and has never had one conversation with the governor on energy, which seems to be her pet issue.
We know Representative Bryce Edgemond well here. He represents this district. He's from Dillingham. He's been on the airwaves with me before. And he's a great man, and I know he's had struggles and challenges in Juneau working with this administration. I think he's managed to accomplish a great deal. He certainly has for us, or as far as I know.
I think he's a very positive member of the legislature down there, and he's doing his best. And for him not to be able to have access to the administration is an abomination.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's a small legislature, so the governor ought to know by first name all the legislators who are down in Juneau. Another thing you've been quoted as saying is that you think that Governor Palin has fanned the flames of hatred, fear, and racism with her vice presidential campaign. Can you elaborate on those comments?
Sure. At many of the rallies, when Sarah Palin was running for vice president, she characterized President Obama as a Muslim, as somebody who palled around with terrorists, someone that we can't trust. And, you know, she stooped to a level which is beyond excuse. During those rallies, in some cases, we heard comments that were as extreme as off with his head. And, you know, whether Governor Palin heard those comments at the rally or not is not the main issue. The main issue is they were front and center in the media, and she did nothing to quell them at future rallies. I believe she incited potential riot and put our current president's life in danger.
Mm.
And it was a conscious effort that the McCain-Palin campaign underwent, and it's inexcusable.
There were some questions
Alaska,
that went unanswered.
We have many cultures here. Yeah. We have people of Muslim descent. We have people of all cultures and races and religions. And this is a melting pot, and we can't have a governor in place that that doesn't seem accepting of different ways of life in this world.
In fairness, though, the people of the United States were not so accepting of a woman from Alaska on the presidential ticket. They didn't like that. And I don't think it was because it was Sarah Palin. It was because it was Alaska. And I found that really insulting. They said, who is she? What does she know? She's governor of the small state? Well, she's got more executive experience than the current president of the United States did when he took office. And there's truth in that. And I would say to you that Governor Palin didn't have control over who came to her rallies. It's hard to deal with thousands and thousands of people, and it's not her job to control what they say. In a true democracy, they have the right to say anything they want to say.
It's true. I agree with you entirely, although John McCain did a wonderful job quelling some of those comments that that came his way, and he did so in the media, and he did so promptly when some of the aggressive comments were articulated. And he was a great example of how, when the line was crossed, how a true leader could actually put a stop to those comments.
Or at least
discourage them.
The liberal media certainly trashed Sarah Palin very much unfairly. She was more talented than they gave her credit for, and so that was discouraging. But I hear what you're saying, and the points are interesting that you bring up and raise, and others have said similar things as well, but not in a while. Well, it's certainly good to talk to you, Rob Rosenfeld. You're running or seeking the Democratic nomination for governor in 2010. How many other candidates are in the field right now?
Right now, there's one other candidate who filed right around the time I filed as a Democrat, and I know that there's a few others that are actually thinking about it. So it could be a field of many. And I really do thank you for your comments about Governor Palin. We certainly wouldn't want to promote an environment where an Alaska representative isn't considered for national politics just because they're from Alaska. And, you know, certainly we need to seek balance in the things that we're saying and we're doing. You did ask earlier about my thought on Governor Palin. I know recently she was in rural Alaska, and she brought out somebody from the religious community and indicated that some of the challenges of rural Alaska are best addressed by the faith-based networks, and I also take issue with that. I believe that rural issues and urban issues are intertwined, and when rural Alaska suffers, so does urban. And I believe that this is a matter for state government, and we need to work hard to make sure that rural and urban Alaska thrive together.
Well, thanks, Rob. Anything else you want to add before we conclude this morning?
Well, I look forward to meeting with folks at some point. I'd love to come out to your region and get to know folks from all the villages that are living along the coastline and some of the Aleutian chain of islands. And you know, my phone's always open. You can give me a call anytime. I'm available at 907-235-7528, and I'm not looking for opportunities just to stand on a soapbox and tell folks what I believe. I'm looking to learn from folks what's most important to you and the solutions that you've thought about over time. And most importantly, I'm going to be forming focus groups on many, many issues that are relevant to your lives. And I'm hoping to form a focus group just on commercial fishing, and would hope to find representatives from your region to guide me through some of the difficult decisions ahead. So I thank you very much for your time today, and look forward to being in touch in the future.
Well, thanks. I hope you would come back or consider coming back as the campaign heats up for governor. Well, thanks, Rob, and good luck in your campaigning.
Thank you so much.
That was Rob Rosenfeld. He is seeking the Democratic nomination in Alaska for governor, and that race is in 2010. And it was an interesting conversation with him. We hope to hear from him again in the not-too-distant future as the race for governor in Alaska heats up. It will certainly be interesting. If you missed this interview and you're just hearing the end of it right now, you can hear the interview in its entirety by going to www.apradio.org. That's www.apradio.org. That is the station's website, and you can download or stream the interview there. There's also a lot of other information, important information there about the communities of Sandpoint, King Cove, and other communities that we reach, like Perryville, where there's going to be a carnival in the near future. All right, we'll go back to the music right now. And at the top of the hour, we'll go to NPR News from Washington, D.C. I'm Kel Southerington, and that is Meet the People for April 16th. It's a Thursday.